It is the State Capitol Report on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. The state's nonpartisan legislative audit bureau is carrying out a request by the legislature's Joint Audit Committee to investigate the particulars of why the state agency that processes professional licenses is so behind on its work. Some Wisconsinites have spoken out about what it's like to be in that limbo waiting on crucial licenses that might enable them to start a job or get a promotion. Call in with your questions about this audit of the Department of Safety and Professional Services, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Republican State Senator Eric Wimberger of Green Bay is co-chair of the Joint Legislative Audit Committee overseeing the audit. State Senator Wimberger, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, thanks for having me again.
All right. Well, lay it out for us. Why do you want to audit this agency?
Well, there was a study committee over the summer, and I think there are just a lot of unanswered questions yet, some lingering problems with time, and unfinished business, I suppose.
What do you mean by lingering problems with time?
There's still people who have been delayed in their licensing, and we don't have any solid answers as to really why, except a broad claim that they need more staff. And I think they're in those circumstances, then you're just kind of figuring out, well, is that true or not? Whether they need staff and how much and what for.
What do you say to lawmakers who feel this audit is a distraction and a time suck from the real work the agency needs to be doing?
Well, there's all sorts of recurring audits all over in various departments have annual audits. And it's kind of routine and normal business to try and figure out and make sure there's transparency and all sorts of things. Now, DSPS is not subject to one of these annual audits. So we just have to figure out what's going on and go from what we find out. The Audit Bureau is a nonpartisan entity, and they just go in and get records. And other than the issue of providing the records, it probably shouldn't be much of an impact on DSPS.
The Audit Bureau has given you some information so far, though, and I think that the additional details will be coming down the line here in months to come. But with the information you've received so far from the Legislative Audit Bureau, what comes to mind? What stands out to you?
What we have is information as to general delays. So DSPS had categorized all of its licensing, and there's some 240 different types of licenses, and they put them into two categories, health and then business. And in those, in those two categories, you create an average that kind of looks good, however, or reasonable, I suppose, or that there's a reasonable delay because you got to process things. But why those two categories? So why wasn't there an outline of all 240 and the status of all 240? So there's a way to hide problems in statistics if you lump them into one group or another. So there could be licenses that are happening very quickly and put in a category along with licenses that are taking very long, and then coming up with an average and saying, well, these quote-unquote business licenses don't have delays. And there's some issues there with dialing it in and figuring out where the necessary where the problems are that need a necessary fix.
So you're looking for more nuance here. Do you feel there are problems in DSPS that are flying under the radar?
I think so. And what was kind of brought to my attention subsequent to this to the study committee, I wasn't on the study committee, but subsequent to the committee, and brought to my attention was that what they were doing was a first-in, first-out system, as far as I can tell, where if your application came in first, then you're the one who's going to have your application addressed first. So that sounds nice, and it sounds fair that you would do it that way, but what if you're the guy behind the first-in guy? So if I were to have a license and there was someone in front of me in line and queue, Well, that person ahead of me might have a criminal record or didn't file their application fee or something like that. So they get delayed. Well, everybody behind that person gets delayed. So I think there's some ways you could probably streamline processes that that might change the dynamic from time to time.
Reintroduce you here for a moment as we talk about Wisconsin's management of professional licenses. We have State Republican Senator Eric Wimberger of Green Bay, who serves on the Joint Legislative Audit Committee. State Senator Wimberger, you know, we've heard details here from 2019 onward that Joint Finance Committee has refused to authorize DSPS's requests for additional staff. Is this the result of those persistent denials?
No, that's not true. DSPS had put in a request for supplemental budget request for funding. Now, these budgets only happen every 2 years, so if you miss the one budget, like we're in a budget season this year, if you miss it, you have to put in one of these supplemental requests until the next budget comes around. The DSPS had put in a request for the supplemental funding to add positions, and then for whatever reason, they withdrew it. And nobody knows quite why, but that's the way it shook out. They can do this at any point in time, including today. They could put in a supplemental request for budgeting, even though we're in budget session. And the Finance Committee looks at it in what's called a 1310 determination. And this is the same thing that happened with the unemployment insurance with Department of Workforce Development, when there was that backlog and everybody was trying to get Caleb Frostman at the time to put in these supplemental requests, and they just didn't do it.
Governor Evers' two-year state budget plan would hike funding by 21%. It would add 80 new jobs, 16 staff to process licenses. What is your position on these proposals?
Who knows? You know, just who knows? That DSPS went to great lengths to do a comparison. This is as a for instance. DSPS went to great lengths to make a comparison as to a particular license in nursing and how the wait time in nursing was not all that long in comparison to other states, which, I mean, that's helpful. But if you're going to spend all that time to figure out what other states are doing for one particular license, all we need is, first and foremost, an outlay of every single license and, you know, what the current delay status is. And then we can make a determination as to what the staffing needs, I suppose. And I don't think, even though the information is obtainable, I don't think DSPS has a grasp on the situation at the moment. So whether they need staff or not, or there could be different processes. For instance, Department of Workforce Development, the new secretary that replaced Caleb Frostman, she had partnered with Google to come up with some AI systems, and now they're high-speed, low-drag. So, you know, we'll see what they need, and we're open to ideas. It's not that there's a denial that there's additional staff needed. It's kind of just a blank spot in our knowledge.
Well, DSPS, Dan Harith, who has been in our program, you know, has said that the work is underway to modernize, you know, the processing software and upgrade their IT systems. What is your response to that?
That may be all well and good, and we're all open for it. I think if that analysis had been done earlier, a couple years earlier, I mean, he's been in office since 2019 with some ideas, then those budget requests would be, if he had some specificity, those budget requests, I think, would get a lot of support in the legislature.
Audit Committee Democrats voted against moving forward with this audit, and I want to hear some tape here. Democratic State Senator, your colleague across the aisle, Tim Carpenter of Milwaukee, ahead of the vote.
It's after the fact. I don't know how much we can do about it now, but I would encourage people on Joint Finance or members of the majority party. I don't have any say over what funds are spent, but it sure wouldn't need to be here if we would have had the money appropriated and when it wouldn't be in this pickle.
And acknowledging the fact that this is an agency almost entirely run on revenue created from permits and licensing fees, how do you feel about moving forward with the audit without bipartisan support?
Well, the audit is to determine what the needs are, and in a sense, that's there's a truth there that the money comes from revenue from the licenses, and we don't use all of that revenue for the licensing process.
Correct, and there is a $47 million surplus of their revenues.
Right.
Yes,
right. So the last budget, when it came around, I guess there was an analysis, and I wasn't in the legislature at the time, but I was just in the legislature, but not on the finance committee. There was a determination that they weren't going to use it all, or that anything that they might use could be supplemented with these supplemental budget requests if there was an overage necessary. So I think logically you'd say, well, why don't we use the program revenue for that? And I think there's that has traction in the legislature. It's just what that amount is. I mean, maybe they need more than what's in the revenue from the licenses. Who knows that yet? And I think that's the purpose of the audit, is to dial that in, because DSPS apparently has not.
Republican State Senator Eric Wimberger of Green Bay with us on the newly authorized probe underway of the Legislative Audit Bureau to scrutinize the processes, turnaround time of the agency DSPS. You can join in on Department of Safety and Professional Services. Your insights, 800-642-1234. Call in with your questions about the audit and what you hope it will reveal. This is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We discuss next steps in an audit underway of the State Department of Safety and Professional Services, DSPS, the agency that grants licenses for a wide variety of professions. Think nurses, barbers, therapists. Governor Tony Evers' budget proposal seeks to hire dozens more workers in DSPS to speed up license processing. Call in with your questions about the audit and what you want answered, your experience in the licensing process in your profession, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Republican State Senator Eric Wimberger of Green Bay is co-chair of the Joint Legislative Audit Committee and stays with us. State Senator Wimberger, in August last year, former DSPS Secretary Don Krim left the agency. Evers then appointed then Assistant Deputy Secretary Dan Harith as the new department head. So how do you feel about Harith's job performance so far?
I think he has the right intentions, and he's trying to do things. There's just some legacy issues going on that, they're just out there yet. And you can say pandemic all day long, but there's just some systemic things that are causing a delay in what should be an appropriate reaction, I guess.
What would you consider to be the most, you know, systemic legacy issue that must be addressed in this agency?
At first blush, I mean, it's kind of what we're trying to find out. But at first blush, there's the technology issue, and who knows if it's staff. But then also decisional things, like, for instance, anecdotally, there was a story relayed to me where there was a doctor who needed a license, and it was delayed. They couldn't get this guy licensed, and obviously it's expensive and all these delays. And it turns out that there were two licensing fee checks sent, one by the hospital and one by the doctor himself. And DSPS couldn't figure that out, to call the guy and say, well, which check do you want us to cash? So this guy was delayed for 90 or however many days on the license. What should be a minor confusion there. So I think it's just not streamlined. And hopefully we can work with Secretary Harris to do that.
Secretary Harris, speaking on our show last year, said the department's top need to address these backlogs is more staff. And he said DSPS has had a call center with only six staffers that receive up to 10,000 calls a week.
Quite frankly, that math simply doesn't work. And we've shared that in the past. And with six FTE across that number of calls, our answer rate is about 34%. And it creates an average hold time of between 35 and 40 minutes.
So an average hold time between 35 and 40 minutes. When Harris says the math doesn't work, what do you hear there in terms of people trying to answer these phones?
And he's probably right there. And, you know, in between these budget cycles, you have to do that supplementary budget request for limited term employees. And I think there's, they don't like that in his testimony in front of the investigatory committee. You know, he indicated he doesn't like using those LTEs, and that's understandable, but you're in the middle of a budget cycle, so you got to just do that and file the paperwork.
What are your thoughts on hiring temp workers to address these workload issues versus full-time jobs?
Oh, no, I think if there's full-time employment needed, that should be something that's addressed. It's just that in between the budget cycles to fill things, especially something like call centers, just to address problems or answer the phone and forward things, or you know, those types of temporary jobs probably can do the particular thing of answering in a phone bank. But I don't think there's really going to be opposition to full-time employees if it's needed.
Talking about Wisconsin's management of professional licenses with Republican State Senator Eric Wimberger of Green Bay, let's go to Andrea in Madison. Hi.
Good morning. Hi. I'm calling. I'm a licensed professional counselor in Madison, and I work for a large hospital organization. And through my profession, my patients often will be in the monitoring program or professional assistance program. And so part of my role is to work with DSPS to ensure that these people are cooperating and compliant with their stipulation agreements and to maintain their professional license. But this requires ongoing communication back and forth with DSPS, and it is well known in my field across the board how challenging it is to communicate with DSPS. There is frequently a different person working within a month or two. Now the contact person is a totally different person that we're supposed to be communicating with. Challenging to get communication and to receive it. And these people, my patients that, you know, are at the whim of the department are really at risk of not having their license renewed. So that is one point. The other point that I wanted to communicate is
very quickly.
We have a problem with electronic health records. I can't communicate with them with email, and that's their preferred way of communication. They want all of these things communicated to email. We can only do it via fax because of HIPAA. So I don't know if they have a way of process improvement with that, but there's some problems.
State Senator Wimberger, the challenges, mm-hmm. the communication breakdowns, go ahead.
No, that's a fact. And there's just those systemic things in that department. And same thing with workforce development a year ago, a year and a half ago. So the first step is to figure out what's going on and then where to target funds for it.
Very quickly here, timeline for when your audit committee will have adequate information from the audit bureau to fully grasp next steps if the next state budget is due in a matter of months.
Right. So there is that dynamic in that there's a timeline issue. So I expect Secretary Harris to be forthcoming with information, because I'm also on the Finance Committee, and one problem of dialing in specificity with the audit, that does take some time. But if he wants to be forthcoming with a plethora of information, so that we can figure out on the front end, just to hopefully come up with something substantive by the end of the budget season, that's definitely a priority.
State Senator Wimberger, thank you for joining us.
Thanks a lot.
Republican State Senator Eric Wimberger represents the 30th District in Green Bay, is co-chair of the Joint Legislative Audit Committee. This is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A new study crunches numbers and provides economic modeling on what a lower income tax rate would mean for Wisconsin. The report presents economic analysis on moving to a flat tax, something that is being tossed around by Republican lawmakers. Call in with your questions about the revenue repercussions of a flat tax rate, how you think it would affect households, businesses, industry, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Kim Rule is an economics professor at UW-Madison and co-director of the Center for Research on the Wisconsin Economy, co-author of this study. Kim, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. So some of the most intense political fights are over taxation. How much do income tax rates affect the economy?
Sure. So I think it's important to note that both the governor and the legislature want tax reform. Both sides think this is a good idea and something that's right for Wisconsin. The question is sort of which tax reform and how to do it and over what time period. And so what this report sort of seeks to fill is we look at a bunch of tax rates. So there's been a focus on the flat tax because that's what's been suggested by the legislature. There's a middle tax cut that the governor suggested. We actually look at 12 different tax policies, all of them which involve some type of reduction, whether it's to a flat tax or changing how brackets work or changing the slope of the tax function across those brackets. And we find largely that any tax rate decrease is going to be good for Wisconsin. It's going to be good for consumers. It's going to be good for businesses. And then what we try to do is then apply some economic theory to try to come up with a better measurement of exactly how big those numbers would be.
Is there a sweet spot, if you will? Is there a rate that would be best for the economy when you consider these 12 policies?
So in general, bigger tax cuts have larger effects on the economy in several ways. So let me maybe just talk about a couple of them. When we think about lowering a tax, you think about the direct effect of the tax. So if you were one of the persons who's having their tax lowered, then that's sort of the direct effect. For the same number of hours worked, for the same wage, you get to take home more of that income. So you have more money to spend on either consuming or for saving for later. And that, you know, that's sort of the direct effect I think we all kind of understand, because we all look at our paychecks every week and say, okay, that's how much money I have, and that's how much the government has from that. The second indirect effect, which is the one that I think economic theory has more to talk about, is this indirect effect that comes through by giving consumers more income, by giving firms a bigger investment to invest in more production, more workers, that grows the entire size of the economy. So there's this indirect, in economics we call it the general equilibrium effect, that tends to raise wages, raise investment, make the economy bigger and more efficient. And that kind of helps everybody, regardless of whether your particular tax was lowered or not. And so that's kind of what we're trying to, that's sort of that second effect that's harder to measure that we're adding in terms of what a lot of the other, in terms of what the other analysis has done. If you want to start talking about sweet spots, this is something that we don't address in this report because it's a more complicated issue that as a society we have to decide. And that's that governments do two things. They collect revenue and they provide government goods and services. And you need revenue to provide goods and services. And so lowering taxes does lower revenue. There's nothing magic about a tax cut that somehow, you know, self-funds. Wisconsin already has tax rates that are low enough. We're not in that situation. And so there will be decreases in revenue. And maybe we can talk about that a bit more, how that works. And so then we have to decide, you know, what level of government consumption do we want? And the harder question is, what do you want to spend that revenue on? And then we can balance off increasing the efficiency of the economy and making the total economy bigger by decreasing the inefficiencies caused by taxes, and balance that off with the government services and goods that households value.
What can economists like yourself agree upon, though, that is sustainable tax policy that won't burden future generations with, you know, being put in a really tough spot in not having enough cash to sustain their communities?
So that depends a lot on that other side of the equation that I was just discussing, on spending. And so this has to be sort of a two-pronged approach. We're kind of talking about one part, right? We're talking about how do changing taxes, for example, by lowering income taxes, we actually increase the amount of tax collections from things like sales taxes and corporate income taxes. Right? So just lowering taxes doesn't have a one-for-one trade-off with total tax revenue. So by making a bigger economy, people consume more, firms earn bigger profits. Those all go back into taxes. And then some of that is offsetting the decrease in the personal income tax revenues that are collected. That what you're talking about, that kind of how are we going to look 10 years from now, depends as much on spending
as it does
on taxes. Or 20
or 30.
Or 20 or 30, certainly. And, you know, it's also worth noting that any kind of policy, particularly things like tax policies, you can expect things to take 10 years before all of the adjustments to those things have happened. So even if we change tax policy today, it takes time for these things to happen, even if we change it tomorrow.
Well, considering, you know, Wisconsin's historical tax policy, the progressive tax structure has been around for over a century. Do we fully understand what the implications would be if we moved away from a progressive tax structure and went to a flat tax?
So, okay, if you'd like to, yeah, we can talk about the flat tax a bit. You know, is one thing we can do is we can look at other states. So there are in some around 13 states or so that already have flat taxes, including our neighbors, Illinois, Indiana, and Michigan. Really, Minnesota is the only other neighbor of ours that has a graduated tax system, and their highest income tax rates are even higher than they are in Wisconsin. And so, you know, this is an experiment that's been tried, we can look at those states and see that to the large extent they're doing fine. Again, any kind of tax policy requires an adjustment in revenues typically, and so, you know, a flat tax is just a different type of tax system.
And when you say they're doing fine, you know, how fine by what standards? Like, you know, what does doing fine mean?
Well, Illinois is a bit different. They have some sort of different problems. But most of these states, every state to some extent has things that are going well and things that are going badly. But these are states that tend to be low tax states that have in migration, that have lower distorted economies, that are growing. And that's not to say those things aren't happening in Wisconsin, but that idea is to try to move to something that's even better, right? We can constantly be trying to improve the way that we tax households and businesses.
What would happen in a flat tax economy, a flat tax system, when the next recession hits?
The same thing that we could do if we had a graduated income tax system. We could deal with it on the spending side, or we could do with it on the tax side. There's nothing about a progressive tax system or a graduated tax system that somehow magically makes recessions better. We can adjust tax rates, which in general is not a great solution. You know, decreasing and increasing tax rates every time the economy changes introduces a lot of uncertainty into household and business decision making, and so keeping tax rates relatively stable is an important part. You know, we would handle a recession just like we've handled previous recessions. We would work on spending. We would look for other ways to tighten the budget, but we waited for the next expansion to come. And there's nothing kind of special about a flat tax that changes any of that.
Talking about income taxes, a new report from the Center for Research on the Wisconsin Economy. Kim Rule is a professor of economics at UW-Madison. You can join in with your questions and comments about Wisconsin's tax structure, where you want it to go. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Kim, your study shows a flat tax rate of 3.25% would result in a reduction in state revenue, as you've mentioned, and the Legislative Fiscal Bureau estimates a flat tax of 3.25% would decrease state revenue by more than $5 billion a year. Starting in 2026, your estimate is about $4 billion. Why is there that big of a difference?
Yeah, so that goes back to a very fundamental difference between what we're doing and what the Legislative Fiscal Bureau is doing. And the important difference here relative to what they're doing is that we're taking into account the behavioral responses of a tax change. And so the LFB is operating sort of as in an accounting sense. If this is what the tax base was before, we lower tax rates, the tax base stays the same. This is how much less income tax we collect, how much less tax we collect. What economic theory tells us, and this is very standard Econ 101 theory here. This is things that have been part of the economics kind of toolkit for 100 years, tells us that as we lower taxes, people respond to those changes. I think we all kind of understand that taxes incentivize or disincentivize to do things. And so lowering a tax says people may go out and acquire more skills. And so they raise their income because the return on having those skills is higher because the government's taking a smaller portion of your income. Part of what income taxes hit are pass-through businesses. So these are firms. Those firms now invest more. And so lowering taxes creates higher wages, more output. Those higher outputs require more consumption, higher corporate profits, and those generate more tax revenues. So it's that behavioral response that we're modeling, how households and businesses respond to a change in a lower tax rate, that offsets some of the direct effect of the lower taxes. And so the LFB doesn't take those things into account. And so that's why our number ends up being smaller. You know, the drop in revenue is smaller because we have more economic activity. The pie is growing. So even though we're taking a smaller slice of the pie, that bigger pie means that revenue doesn't fall as much as it does relative to the LFB's numbers.
Let's bring on a call. Michael in Milwaukee. Michael, hi. What is your question?
Hi. With regards to a flat tax, as I understand it, it will disproportionately affect lower and middle income families, because if they're paying the same tax rate as someone of a higher income bracket, they will have a lower total portion of their spendable income available to them. I just like that to be out there and people know it.
Michael, thank you so much for elevating that. Kim, what is your response there, affecting lower income people much more than people at the top of the tax bracket?
Yeah, so in general, that's kind of true. And so I think what we have to think about is there are other ways besides the tax system to relieve tax burdens, besides the individual income tax, to relieve tax burdens on lower income households.
Like what?
Yeah. So, for example, things like the Wisconsin version of an earned income tax credit or other refundable tax credits to low income households. And the reason that's preferable, what economic theory would say, is I want to lower the marginal distortions. An income tax rate like this distorts people's decisions, and I want to lower those distortions as much as possible. If I want to then do some redistribution, if I want to lower or raise the after-tax income of lower income or middle income families, I can do that through a system of tax credits that's less distortionary, that doesn't require me distorting everybody in the whole economy just because I want to do some redistribution to lower income households.
But if you have lower revenue, if you've got lower revenue coming into the state, I mean, who's going to float more tax credits?
So you have to prioritize, just like any household or any family budget. You have to decide what you want to spend money on and what's worth it. So maybe we want to do more subsidization of lower income households, then that comes from somewhere else. Just like any other household would have to do, you have to decide on what your spending priorities are. There's always an unlimited demand for government expenditure. And the hard you know, the hard thing that economists have to tell people is, you know, there is no free lunch. To give something to someone, you're taking it away from somebody else, and that's fine. That's part of the social contract we're signing. But that's a decision that we have to come to. Economic theory can tell us a bit about that, but in the end, as a society, we have to decide how much of that redistribution we want. As economists, we can tell you the most efficient way to do it, which is to keep taxes low and on a broad base, and then we can use other instruments to redistribute.
Kim Rule is co-director of the Center for Research on the Wisconsin Economy at UW-Madison, explaining their new study identifying a dozen income tax policies to energize the state's economic outlook. Call in with questions and comments about tax policies in Wisconsin, what you would think would be a boon to Wisconsin's overall prosperity. 800-642-1234. It's the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We break down a study from UW-Madison's Center for Research on the Wisconsin Economy that puts forth a dozen policies to lower the state's individual income tax rates, makes a case for the flat tax that we've been talking about. UW-Madison economics professor Kim Rule is a study co-author and stays with us. Let's bring on a call now, Elizabeth in Ellison Bay. Hi, Elizabeth. Go ahead.
Hi. Wow, is this regressive? Really troubling. So I just want to bring up that it seems like if the driver is to increase spending, there's other ways to increase spending that would, and by the way, I don't think that spending is the holy grail, but if we're going to increase spending, there's other options. So instead of telling the people with the least to tighten their belts so that the people with more can spend more, another option is to increase the minimum wage. Rising tide raises all ships. And then we've got everybody with more in their pocket, including the people with the least. You're pulling away from the people with the least to give more spending opportunity to the people with the most. I'm just completely shocked that this is coming out of Madison, but go ahead and respond.
Elizabeth, thank you. Kim, go ahead.
Sure. So I didn't say that low-income people should tighten their belt. I said that the state of Wisconsin has to maybe tighten their belt and think about their whole budget, not just the transfers that we make to low-income people. But, you know, in general, a flat tax is still a tax cut for low-income households. So it's not that we're making life harder for the low-income. We're trying to make the economy bigger. In terms of minimum wages, at least here in Madison, the minimum wage doesn't matter anymore. The minimum wage has been surpassed by low-wage kind of occupations. You know, food service is already paying much more than the minimum wage. So you need a minimum wage.
Is that universally true, though?
You know, it's a market-by-market thing. But in general, in most places in 2022, 2023, it is. The federal minimum wage, you know, different states have different minimum wages, but the federal minimum wage is most likely not binding in most places. And in Wisconsin, in Madison for sure, it's not. And so minimum wages as a policy, again, generates a bunch more distortions, in particular distortions for people who are who are earning those low wage jobs, right? That makes it harder to hire someone. So the people who have jobs end up with higher incomes, but then the people who don't get those jobs because those minimum wages are too high now don't have jobs at all. And so, you know, minimum wages are kind of an insider-outsider kind of policy. And as I mentioned before, there's nothing that says cutting tax rates doesn't mean that we can't redistribute across the income distribution. Right? It just says that we've made the economy a little bit bigger, and that we have a little bit less tax revenue, and we have to decide, you know, how we want to spend that revenue. There's nothing that says we can't spend that on transfers to low-income people. It just means we have to not spend money on something else.
Let's just take a moment here with insight from the Wisconsin Policy Forum. Jason Stein and WPR Central Time recently talking about the potential effects on revenue if Wisconsin had a flat tax.
Right now, the break-even point to for a revenue neutral flat tax is about 5.2%. The tax rate, you know, that would be, you know, a tax increase for people at the, you know, or for income at the lower parts of the current brackets.
So based on your research, would a 5.2% flat tax rate be revenue neutral?
We haven't done that experiment. Revenue neutral wasn't something that, that we were studying, but just from what I know about our model, it would, might be even a little bit higher than that. So yes, a revenue neutral flat tax would be in the fives most likely, which would be a tax increase for lower income people, which I think is something nobody wants and not something that we're suggesting is a good idea. And so that's why, you know, we say this is going to, if we want to move to a lower income tax rates, whether that's a flat tax or still a graduated tax, but perhaps something that with a sort of lower or collapsing brackets to provide some tax relief to people, there's going to be a decrease in tax revenue no matter what you do. And the decisions we have to make then around the spending side.
Kim Rule, professor of economics at UW-Madison. Let's go back to the phones now with Rosa. Oh, I'm sorry. Rosa is not there. What about Martha in Menominee? Martha, hi.
Yeah, hi. Our neighbor, Michigan, brought in $246 million in cannabis tax revenue from cannabis sales. Your guest said it would take 10 years to implement a change in this tax policy. Would it take 10 years to implement that type of income from legalized cannabis sales?
Martha, thank you. Kim.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, so likely not. If the legislature was to legalize cannabis in some form and tax it, the initial effects would likely be, would likely show up pretty quickly. Then there would be long-term effects that, again, this is generating either more tax revenue, more investment in the economy, people building, you know, retail outlets and production facilities. Those kinds of things take longer, but you would see a faster increase in tax revenues from something like that.
Martha, thank you for the call. Kim, what data are you most closely watching in flat tax states like Michigan, Illinois, like Indiana, as you examine tax policy going forward?
I'm looking at, you know, it's complicated because there are lots of things that are changing at once. And that's part of what makes our job difficult. And that's why we use models to try to help us isolate particular mechanisms and reasons why we think changing taxes have effects on economies. But in general, I'm looking at things like what's happening to after-tax revenue, what's happening to consumption growth, what's happening to investment in economies. And, you know, and not just for flat tax states, but for lower tax states or lower tax than Wisconsin, I'm thinking about migration, and I'm interested in, you know, Wisconsin has a long-term issue in employment markets, which is we have falling birth rates and we have minimal in-migration. And so the labor force in Wisconsin is, in the long term, is shrinking. And that's going to cause problems with generating business investment and future growth. There's lots of things that influence migration decisions, but just to look across the data, lower tax places seem to have more in-migration right now.
Thank you so much for joining us. Kim Rule, professor of economics at UW-Madison, co-director of the Center for Research on the Wisconsin Economy. We have a link to their study at wpr.org/mornings. It's the State Capitol Report. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.